you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR show. This week, no, you're not seeing double. It is the Sklar brothers coming on the show. Super cool guys. Very happy that we got them on. If you're a fan, you could have heard them 5 days ago commercial free at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the code SDR. You get 20% off and a 7-day free trial. We do the show every Wednesday, every Saturday. And we hope you do just listen and spread the word. That's the most important thing. But here it is right now, the Sklar Brothers episode of the SDR show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is the hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the host. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's fart, you need to know. The SDR show. Let's go.
It is the SDR show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again, James Mattern. With apparently a hat on because he doesn't like being bald. Is that what it is, James?
No, but I feel comfortable. I like wearing hats. It's a good, I take it off all the time. I'm still one of these people at when I eat supper and that, I take the hat off and show everyone my bald cranium.
At least you're not wearing a hat at the dinner table. I feel like it's insulting. All right, so
a lot of people still do chooches.
Right into our guests. They most people might know them from that show that now just has a new life in a different form, but we'll start. It was Cheap Seats. They're Better Call Saul. 6 comedy albums, 2 Comedy Central half-hour specials, Netflix special, 2 podcasts right now, the Dumb People Town podcast and The View from the Cheap Seats, along with their new UFC Fight Pass show called The Nosebleeds, currently on tour. It is the Sklar Brothers. How are you guys?
We are good. Great. Thanks, Ralph. I appreciate it. And James, do not take that hat off. We don't need to see that.
And
that
don't ever use the word supper again. What are you, 80?
I am 80. I'm older than you guys.
Supper.
By the way, let me start with this. This is where it's some similarities. I almost met you guys in Montreal. I was with Shannon. Other co-host, Big J, was out there doing some comedy. And we went out there to support. And you did, cool. I think you guys did the bonfire. Am I right?
Yes,
is that
we
what
did.
Happened?
Yeah. Yes, we did.
I was there. Yeah. We watched from a distance. But here's where it's interesting. I am also a twin. Okay.
Are you really?
Oh, nice. Wow.
Also with an R and a J, even though Randy is really, I think your real name is Pharrell or something. It's
Farrell,
not really
Randy. But I go by Randy. Randall's in my middle name. Yeah.
Okay.
But...
So you're an R and a J. We are Ralph and Joe, right?
Yeah.
We are 4 minutes apart. We were how many minutes apart are you guys?
Five.
Okay. But here's Ralph. Where we're fraternal. You guys are identical, but here's where we're cooler. We were born in different decades. I was born New Year's Eve, 1969. He was born January 1st, 1970, 4 minutes apart. You guys are not that far away. You guys are born in second week of January. So even though I think I'm a year or two older than you, so it's a lot of kismet. And we're all Jews. We're all Jews.
I love that your parents are like, we want to name our kids so they'll grow up to be plumbers. Ralph and Joe.
Absolutely.
Hey, we need to get this toilet snake. Who are you going to ask to do it?
Ralph or Joe will do it.
He'll just get over here and do it.
Here's how different my brother is than you guys. Yeah. I thought, here's a fun idea. I'll bring my twin brother on, mm-hmm. and we'll see which twin knows their twin brother better. Right?
He doesn't know you at all.
Not only that, he didn't want to do it. He said, I'm not interested, number one.
He doesn't care.
And then he said to me, I asked him on Monday, we're taping this on a Thursday, and he goes, you know, I don't feel so great, so I don't want to do it. I'm like, Joey, it's fucking Monday.
Yeah,
you got 4 days to feel better.
You can't say, I don't feel so great now. Like, I don't feel so great works the morning of, right? I don't feel so great the morning of. Night before is like, hey, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make that. That's the night before. I'll take an I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it. I don't feel so great is the morning of excuse.
It's crazy. And then, by the way, he said, you know what? We'll do it next time. I said, next time I interview identical twin comedians, is that when you want me to do it? How often is that going to happen?
It's never going to happen.
The Lucas brothers, get them in here. Get them in.
Get them in.
And so my brother and I, and I'm curious how this trajectory for you guys is.
Yeah.
We lived together most of our lives, right?
Yeah.
We separated when we realized we were basically common law married to each other. It was time to move on. Right. And when I Google you guys, the first thing that comes out, so I imagine it's somewhat similar, is, are the Sklar brothers conjoined twins? Is the first Google thing. So just out of curiosity, I know you're both married, you both have kids now, so yeah. I imagine it's not as bad now. But no. What was that growing up with you guys where it compares to my brother and I?
So I think they said we conjoined twins because we played conjoined twins like several times, like enough that like if a conjoined twin thing comes up, we're like, I don't think we should do it. Like we should not do it anymore. Like we did it for Grey's Anatomy. It was huge. And, you know, we were both in love with the same woman. And then we got separated and we decided we just want to hang out with each other and not be with this woman. And then our dad, when he was alive, God rest his soul, he had the best comment ever. He was like, you guys should call Shonda Rhimes. I'm like, okay, we'll do that. Good call, Dad. Call Shonda Rhimes and tell her that you want to come back on the show next week and get sewn back up together. I was like, that is the dumbest idea ever.
And then we were like, wait a second. That is the most Grey's Anatomy storyline ever.
I'm like, Dad, do you have a pipeline to Shonda Rhimes? So we did that. And we were the conjoined twins on The Oblongs and in a movie in Bubble Boy. So, yes, I think that's why they said it. We spent a lot of time together. But I don't know if you guys did this growing up in, I'm assuming, I want to. It was somewhere in New York. I said Jersey initially.
Brooklyn.
I don't know if you guys in Brooklyn, if you each had your own separate rooms growing up or you were in the same room.
We were in the same room up until we were about 12. And then my brother petitioned to get the room next door that was kind of empty. And he moved into that room.
Those are prime masturbating years. I understand why he made that choice.
You need your own spot to jerk it. So we grew up in separate rooms from a very early age. We grew up in the Midwest in St. Louis, where there were rooms that you could grow up in. And it's not like we had money. We just had rooms. And so the thing about that is that it allowed us to sort of develop individually separate from each other. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, I think that's why we can kind of hang out today. And the same thing has kind of repeated itself with our families. You know, I've got two teenage kids, 15 and 17 years old. Jay's got a 14-year-old and a 9-year-old. And so like our lives are set. We aren't the Sklar brothers. You know, I'm just the dad who fucked everything up. You know what I mean?
I'm like the dad who didn't screw the water bottle top closed. So then I get a text from my son saying, thanks a lot. My entire bag is wet because you didn't. And I'm like, oh, good. This is a great opportunity for you to start doing this now forever.
Exactly. Exactly.
How quickly did you live together when you moved out? Like,
yes.
Did
you, so we live. So we went to the University of Michigan together. We both we were roommates freshman year. And then like we separated and lived with other folks and, you know, lived in a fraternity house and, you know, I mean, we lived in the same house, but we had similar friends but the great thing about going to Michigan was it's such a big school. I had all my classes and Jay would have all his, and there'd be whole swaths of the school that didn't realize we were twins, and they'd see someone walking down the street and be nice to them. And Jay would be like, who is this person? I love that Jay had no clue that that's what was going on.
Like, I knew that's what was going on.
Who
but
is this
I was
person?
Always
and Jay's like baffled by it, but
I'm like, how nice are you to so many people? Like, just
I was nice
it
to
down.
A lot. Right. I was nice to a lot of people. Anyway, the point is that like they didn't know that we were twins. So it's good. It allowed us to be individuals and then allowed us to appreciate the fact we were twins. We were doing comedy in college. And so we moved to New York together, lived in Manhattan from 94 to 99, and then moved out to LA together. And then my then girlfriend, now my wife, like came out and we lived together in like 99 or 2000. So,
nice people just coming up to you and saying, hi, remind me of that movie. I don't know if you ever saw it. Is it called Identical Strangers?
Crazy. I was hey, here are three fucked up guys. Let's put them in a restaurant setting. That's a great idea. If you've ever watched the show.
Yeah, let's add cocaine to the mix.
Yeah.
Weird.
Here are people who don't really understand each other. Let's add a very volatile drug and throw that in the middle of this weird relationship.
Let me ask you this. I looked a little bit at it, so I can't give 100% answer. I know that coming up, there's a couple of things that Jason is doing that Randy is not. But in general, is it mostly the same credits? Like, are there a lot of things you guys have ever done sans each other? Or is it 99%? Together.
Oh, we've done a few. Jay did a couple. Jay, you did Curb
Your Enthusiasm.
I got to do that, which was really fun. And so he did a pilot. He was the lead in a pilot for True TV, which was really fun and really
really cool and super fun and interesting. And that was great. And then Randy did
What We Do in the Shadows this past.
Right. You played wasn't it like he did like a spoof on the Property Brothers kind of?
Yeah.
Right?
So basically, I don't know if you've been watching the show. It's a phenomenal show. They shoot it up in Toronto. Probably one of my favorite comedies on TV. That's always like the you get the job and then you're like, oh no, we don't want to fuck up one of our favorite shows. You know what I mean? It's like you get nervous because it's like, I don't want to now screw this up. But it was a great part and a great idea where in this fourth season, they're like their house goes into disrepair. And so all throughout the season, they start teasing us on TV, like our show, this fictitious show called Go Flip Yourself. And then in the seventh episode of this 8-episode season in the fourth season, we come and go to flip the house and they shoot it exact. So it's, you know, if you have seen the show, it's shot like very dark. There's like all the lighting is dark. Everything's dark. And then they shot this episode like it's an HGTV episode. Super bright, lower third graphics. It was just brilliantly done.
Teasing other fake shows. It was really, really funny. They did a great
job. They did a produced show open for our show. So instead of the What We Do in the Shadows, like produced open, they showed the Go Flip Yourself fictitious show open. So we got to shoot that. It was just amazing. But like, I don't want to give anything away, but I'm in the majority of the episode and Jay is not. So I got to work an extra several weeks on the show and it's just me and, you know, Matt Berry and Natasha Demetrio and Kayvon and Harvey.
I love
and
Matt Berry great. So much. He's one Matt of Barry my favorite. So oh my God. He's so fucking funny.
Brilliant and fun. And what was so great is that like over time and hanging out, we really got to know each other and had a great time. And he just started to trust everything that we were doing. And so what I loved is that the thing that we were trying to procure, the relationship that needed to be, like, he allowed it to go so much further on screen because we took what we were doing off screen, like kind of on screen, and it just was great. And he was very, very sort of open as far as that went. And I think it made the whole thing a lot better.
It was great.
I have a memory that there's that great thing that he did. I forget what show it was on where he was like this asshole that as soon as he found out a girl had a boyfriend, he would like drop the glass.
Snuffbox.
Yeah, snuff so box. Fucking great. And I was, long story as short as possible, I saw a girl get hit by a car on a bike, right? And I went to help her and she happened to be like this fucking gorgeous girl. But
sure.
Regardless, I was like, I actually noticed her coming towards me like, well, look how hot that girl is. And then a second later, she got hit by a car, right?
Oh my God.
And
because he was looking at her.
Yeah, exactly. I helped pick her up and bringing her because she was bleeding. I was carrying her to the ambulance.
Wow.
While she said, I have to call my boyfriend and see if he's to let him know what happened. And
you dropped her.
I so wanted to Matthew just, Barry it.
Yeah,
but
just
I didn't
drop
do
her.
It. Yeah, just you know, drop
I'm glad,
her.
I'm,
fuck you.
Fuck off.
I'm glad you didn't do that. I'm glad you didn't do it.
I was so close to doing it, but no, I did not.
Oh my God. It's a great bit. It's a phenomenal bit.
I almost wanted to do it for the bit, but I didn't do it. Yes.
So to answer, that's a long-winded way of saying, yes, we've done a lot of stuff on our own. And our attitude is like, we need to be good on our own.
Right.
So that when we do come together and do stuff together, it is like a special thing. But at the same time, if I'm in a whole bunch of this thing just by myself, it can't just be like what I do with Jason and that's it. It has to be like good on its own in order for us to work.
By the way, my dad, when I was growing up, again, he was a lot older. He passed away as well. He had two identical twin friends. And this is the 70s before you would get canceled on this. And they would literally, one would bring a girl home, have sex with her, go in the bathroom, and they would swap out, which is wild.
Terrible.
And that is terrible. It's as a father of daughters, that's freaking awful.
It is wild. You would never get away with that now, but it is wild.
And
in the
70s, shouldn't have been able to get away with it.
No, you shouldn't, but I'm just saying, like, in the 70s it was like a bragging topic, but
I know.
Nowadays it's like, Jesus Christ, how could you do that? You basically raped a woman. It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. I hope
that was something like in movies and TV, like a joke. Hey, let's do the old flipper.
Benny and Bernie get, like, a Beta. Big laugh. I can say it now. Stuff. They're both not with us anymore, but that's who
Benny and they were definitely not beta males. I'll say this about it. It's like in you start watching old movies. We were talking about this on stage, like a movies in the 80s with your kids. And it's like, you forget about like all the stuff that was just not you're like, you're watching and you're just like, oh, they're going to love this movie. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, shit, there was a rape in 16 Candles. Oh, my God. Oh, God. He just said, you be her. You're me and I'm it. Oh, great. And we just sort of glossed over that whole thing. It's like we were talking about the Karate Kid. Like if a cop came over the night that Daniel LaRusso spent his 16th birthday with just a guy who's the building manager of your apartment building that you just moved into. Okay, that's not weird at all. And he's an older man who's a single man. And he's just, and the cop came in and said, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I was just getting drunk on sake with this 16-year-old boy right here. And I gifted him a silk robe that I asked him to wear.
Sometimes we go on a boat and I let him punch me in the stomach. It's like,
hey. I had him wear short shorts while I allow him to wash all of my cars while I sort of lured him through a bonsai tree that I'm clipping. I mean, it's crazy.
It doesn't fly. But by the way, that leads me into something that I heard you guys talk about in depth. I always say on the show, I try to do a lot of research and James can rely on just being funny. But you talked in one episode, it was maybe 2 years ago, a lot about cancel culture. And the thing I don't agree with, and I want to get your take on it just because you said this, that you think there should be a different set of rules for comedians because they're just trying to make jokes on topics that are sensitive to try and find the funny. And it should be a different set of rules for comedians when it comes to sensitive topics.
Yes,
and I don't agree with that because there is no school of comedy. Anybody can say they're a comic. It is a weird way to set that criteria. I think it should be more, as long as it's not coming from a fucked up place or an asshole place, you should get a pass, is what I think.
Good point.
That's a fair point. I think we could maybe refine our point a little bit more, which is to say, in a comedy club setting where you're at a show where the social contract of that show is that people are going to push the limits. That's what this show is about. If you don't like that, then you can leave. Like, no one's forcing you to do this. Whereas if you're watching an NFL game, or if you're watching the nightly news, or if you're watching something where there is no expectation that people are going to push the envelope and go for something like that, or say something that will be shocking and upsetting to some people, then that's a different set of rules. So I think what we were trying to get at, which we maybe weren't so clear as, and I can clarify, is that I think comedians in comedy club settings should have the, in my opinion, not necessarily a pass to like just essentially be racist.
No, you have to be responsible and you have to craft it. And by the way, if it comes off sounding like hate, you're a bad comedian. You screwed it up and you didn't actually write a joke. You just made a hateful statement or this or that. And if that's the case, like Michael Richards dropping an N-bomb at the Laugh Factory, you can't do that. That's the beauty, is that there are lines. Like, we're not saying it's all one way or the other. Like Michael Richards, whatever you were doing there, even if you thought that that was a joke, you can't cross that line. You just can't. For people who are making points and statements and whatnot to push the envelope in a comedy club setting.
You might disagree with what Dave Chappelle is saying about trans people, trans culture and whatnot, but he's crafting an opinion and a joke. His goal is to make people laugh and his goal is to make point. Now, some people might be like, well, people are following that and they're now there's a gray area. And yes, they may have points that like, his attitude may support other people perpetrating violence against people out of the notion that they're like, well, I believe what he believes and da da da. So like, there is power in comedians' words. And certainly the bigger the comedian and the more influential they get, then there's more on their shoulders. That's a fact. But, you know, if you go to the roast battle up in the Comedy Store on a Tuesday night at midnight and you see two people going at each other, you know that it's going to get... You know, the gloves will be off. People will
it's a beautiful thing. It's so funny how fun and freeing the roast battle is in this society that you just described.
We have a new show on our network called Spit Roast, where two comedians roast a topic as opposed to roasting each other. I brought a girl that I was dating there, and she felt it was also like toxic because you're a little very politically correct and was like, oh, it's so much hate. I'm like, no, everyone is here because they want to be here. And they're all enjoying this. They know what this is about. And then she kind of loosened up. James, you're a Holocaust denier. What's your thought on this topic?
Yeah, let's hear it, James.
Well, that was a good Larry King toss right there. Yeah. That's
James, you're a Holocaust denier. Let's hear it.
That's more like early 90s Crossfire. That's more right. John Sununu thrown to someone.
Exactly. Sure. Exactly.
Sure.
It's weird. I hadn't done it in a while. I used to like, I loved roast battles so much in New York. I used to be the odds maker. And I would be like, this guy minus 350. And I'll be honest, didn't know half the comics.
There's sure.
A lot of them are like young.
Just on look alone, on look alone.
I honestly would look at their Instagram feed and be like, this one's way too confident. I can tell their skill level isn't up to the confidence.
Yeah.
Plus 350. He's going to get his ass beat by this girl who looks really quiet, which means she has a lot of hate in her heart.
That's right.
So I judged Comedy Fight Club a couple weeks ago, and I felt embarrassed for myself in the fact that I was shocked. And I don't give a shit about nothing. These kids were so wild, and I haven't heard words like
shocked
that.
Oh, shocked is
that
they were so brutal?
Yeah, they were still good, but it's still like a lot of green comics, and I felt like an old man. I'm not mad at them, but I hated myself because I'm like, I felt like a 90-year-old Southern, like, grandma from, like, 83.
And it was shocking. It was like, shocking what they were saying. Excuse me.
Goodness gracious. Like, that, like, drinking sweet tea and trying to tell you about the good old days, and I'm just... And they're just freely. My one issue is this, is I think that we sometimes hide behind we can say anything. And so people without skill, like you guys said, with hate, we have to be careful that some people think they can just use a word to be edgy and they don't know how they're using it. And they get mad at you for getting mad at it. But you're using a chemical that you can't control. And you can't tell someone that you can't use the N word or the gay F word, or you can't use. Those, if you're going to use it, you better land the plane. And when you're
you
like,
better land that plane.
Even I like your own little, you put that, the gay F word. I've never heard it put that way. I like the way you put
I like
that.
Well, the original I agree with you. I'll give an example of a joke that there's a really funny roast comic out here in LA at Roast Battle. His name's Joe. What's his last name, Rand? He's
in a
wheelchair.
He's in a wheelchair and he's like it's hard to understand him.
Can I just say for a half second, I really thought his name was Joe. What's his something?
Joe, like, what's
what
his
kind
name?
Of,
Joe.
What kind of wheelchair. Name is that?
He's Japanese, and he's like, you know, his body is gnarled. You can hardly understand what he's saying, but he is a killer joke writer, and he like dominates in roast battle because of his jokes, but someone else in a roast battle against him. Said, do you know how I know you're going to hell, Joe? And he said, how? And he said, because there's a stairway to heaven. Now the place went crazy.
That's amazing.
A killer joke. And then Joe came back and won. So he took the joke and then he came back and won the battle. That joke was great, but overall he won the battle. And then he was lifted up around the crowd and celebrated and
like taken out of his chair and lifted up.
Cool. Now, Randy and I, as parents of kids, and we know people who have kids have disabilities. And, you know, as long as you live in this life, you get to know people who are everyone's dealing with something with their children or their life. And for the thing that those parents want the most for their children is to just be treated sort of equal or just in some ways be put on the same playing field, because so often there's like this feeling of like, well, we got to support them. And that is in its own way patronizing and makes them feel worse. So for this kid's parents, wherever they are, to just know that this guy took a punch to the face in the form of a joke and then came back and won and was paraded around the room as a champion. That to me is like the best thing in the world. And you lose that if we say, you're not allowed to say this, you're not allowed to say that, you're not allowed to do that. He loses that victory. Right, yeah, James? What were you going to say, James?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, if this is what I'm thinking of, the JFL before the pandemic, they did the basketball game and I was announcing. I'm pretty sure he played basketball in his Zoom.
I mean, if I'm the referee, I'm calling traveling every time he's on the court.
To watch people try to defend him was better than
I would knock him out of his chair. Right. I would knock him out of his chair. I mean,
just put like pebbles on the floor and he won't be able to move.
I would do a box in four wheels, a box in one.
Box
in one. So the same thing is he lost a roast battle. He lost one, and I actually thought that was probably even better than the win. And for the same reasons that Jay said, is like he got his ass beat. And it's like you're going to win some and you're going to lose some. And it's like no one treated him any differently. He was like, and so in that way, it's maybe the most egalitarian scenario ever, where you can say whatever you want. Right. You can't get mad. And again, if it comes off like hate, like there was this dude who had been to like prison and he was like a really hard sort of guy who came up there and he was up against a really good joke writing, like 20-year-old woman. And she
just kept trying to call her like a lesbian
and this, boo, lesbian that, and you're like, ass, dude, like this, you can't bring that into this room. It's like, I know you're hard in several other circles and whatnot, but you just got your ass handed to you in the most there's like, if you were to put the two of them together, be like, no man, this woman is gonna get smoked. And she just destroyed him like with surgical precision. Awesome. Yeah. And you say to yourself, all right, this is great. And it's just fun to laugh at it. And we've taken friends of ours who aren't in the comedy scene, who've like come from, like, we have a good friend in who's a lawyer in Detroit. And he's like, we brought him to the roast battle one night and he was like, I can't believe, again, because you live in this world where you're not allowed to say a lot of these things. He's right. Like, I can't believe this exists. Everyone's having fun. It's cool. The social contract that we were talking about exists in there. And by the way, if you're not funny, you don't know how to handle the language, you don't know how to do it, you realize that when no one laughs.
Right. That's what's nice about it also, that it is a grand equalizer. Funny is funny for the most part. All right. Before we go any further, it's a simple phrase. You've heard it a million times on this podcast. It's $60 kilos. That's right. That unattainable number that no one in the world of Kratom was able to accomplish. Well, that is until Yo Kratom came along. And for years, entrepreneurs, scientists, academics, they all tried to solve that $60 kilo problem. And it never was figured out until Yo Kratom came along. And through their sheer brilliance, you can get a kilo of Kratom for just $60. How did they solve that problem? Does it even matter? Not really. Just go to YoKratom.com and know that you could stock up on high quality curated Kratom at YoKratom.com. $60 a kilo. They've been a sponsor for 3 long years plus. So support the sponsors that support the show. YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo. All right, let's get back into it. I want to talk about the new show on UFC Bypass. You started doing the show years ago called Cheap Seats. I forget how many years it was on, but it was on quite a while. That's how a lot of people recognize the two of you. And now this one, I guess you modernized it, called the Nosebleeds, because you're doing UFC.
Yeah.
And the one I saw was the first episode where you looked back on literally the first UFC fight, one.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to watch, because also you watch it, and I don't know why, I'm sure you felt this way as well. It seems like it's from 1,000 years ago.
1,000 years ago.
Right? That's hard to believe.
Great observation. That's how we pitched it. We're like, look at where UFC has come today. So basically the executive, and I'll give him his props because he is best executive we've ever worked with. And we've been in this business for 30 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's the best executive we've worked with many. This is the best by far. His name's Crowley Sullivan. Even though we went to the University of Michigan and he went to Michigan State University, and he's the biggest Spartan fan, and we're the biggest Michigan Wolverine fan, and ne'er the twain shall ever meet. I love this guy like a brother. He's unbelievable. He's funny. He knows when to give the artist the rope, and he is so supportive and amazing. He had bounced around. He was the executive in charge of Cheap Seats back in from 2002 to 2006.
And we then did that four seasons. We did 77 episodes.
And for those that don't know, you're watching old ESPN sporting events stuff. And you kind of Mystery Science Theater 3000 it, where you, I'm assuming you watch through a couple times, you make some jokes, I could be wrong, write down some ideas, and then you watch that show and comment on it as it's happening. Correct?
So it was much more preparation went into it than that. Like, we'd watch it several times. We sent it out to writers who wrote jokes, and then we would ingest those and sort of pick the best ones. It was very mathematical. We'd be like, this is a great joke for this thing right here, but if we say this, we can't make this run of jokes down here. So we got to cut that one and do these. And so it is very, the trick is that we made it seem like it was just us riffing and hanging out on the couch, you're hanging out with us, but it was very much that we sort of ingested some of these great jokes that were written for us and that we wrote ourselves. And so we did sketches and, you know, running studio bits and whatnot. We're like, we want to make a comedy show that people like, in the same way that they like Chappelle's Show, in the same way that they like 30 Rock, in the same way that they like The Daily Show or Conan or whatever. Like,
right,
we want people to see this as a show that stands with those, not with SportsCenter and, you know, everything like that. And I think we did achieve that. So when this guy bounced around, he finally went to the UFC and he was running Fight Pass, which is their library of all their stuff. And he came to us last year and said, I want to figure out a way to redo Cheap Seats. Can we do it? And we said, okay, let's think about this. And we're like, look, the old UFC, like you said, feels like it's from 1,000 years ago. Different,
even though it's 1993.
Right. Yeah. And also, they used to just put anybody in the ring with anybody.
Oh, yeah. Like sumo wrestler and a jiu-jitsu guy. It was
almost like
guy.
A chance to see which fighting discipline could defeat another fighting discipline. That was what the beginning. It was almost like a social fighting experiment in some way.
Right. And Jim Brown, former.
That's what I was gonna say. Jim Brown has no business. It's insanity.
We're like, Jim Brown, this is what we said on the show. Jim Brown, you've never fought MMA and you're retired from football. What's your opinion?
Yeah. like Jim Brown's there. What was OJ booked? Oh, I'm sorry. It was the mid 90s. He was in the process, of being booked.
Right. Yeah. So we said to UFC, you know, it's crazy to think of doing a comedy, you know, in the UFC world. It's a people who are the fans of it are very protective of the brand. They very much care about like how it's being treated and whatnot. So we had to kind of come at it from a slightly different angle, which is this is what you used to be.
Right.
It's like look at an old yearbook picture of yourself. All right. You graduated in 88. Am I right? 87
close
or 88?
87.
Yeah. So you graduated in 87. Think about your yearbook picture in 87. I'm sure you had a mullet.
It's awful.
Right?
Awful.
So, but you know who you became now. You're a good-looking guy. You know who you are. You're an accomplished human being. You're fine. I mean, Joe's a little better looking, but, you know.
Yeah, Joe is better looking. But Joe is definitely better looking. There's no doubt. But I'm 6'5". He's 5'7", so I have that.
Amazing. So that's wild. You know what I mean? Like, you know who you've become. You're confident in who you are right now. But if you look back at that picture, you can go off on it because you know where you've come. So we're like, it's a bit of a love letter to where you guys are now by making fun of what it used to be back in the day. And, you know, and they love that. And then we said, okay, we're not going to make basically our version of Cheap Seats with zero restrictions. We can curse. We can be as edgy as we want to be. It doesn't necessarily mean you just go hog wild, but you want to make fun of what is actually happening on the screen.
No, there was like a thing where they were saying there's no rules. No, first of all, they said there's no rules, and then they start listing a bunch of rules. They're like, you can't do no this, no that. No biting. We're like, no biting. How's he gonna come? You know, things like that.
So how's it gonna get hard? So those are jokes that we made that we could never have made on ESPN. So again, this is an evolution of that idea and that concept. But like we called John Hamm, and he on the sixth episode, he played, you know, this personal injury lawyer who wanted to help fighters who've been injured at work. I mean, it's so dumb, like an opportunistic guy. And you know, then the commercials kind of devolved into him in a thing with his ex-wife who was a paralegal at his firm. Mary Lynn Rice Cup played him. So it like becomes this like Mr. Show sketch or something we approximate towards something like that. We were influenced by that show, you know, and we had Andy Richter played like UFC's tech support. And we're like, Andy, what do you do? He played himself. We're like, what are you doing? He's like, well, you know, Conan hasn't paid me in the last 10 years. We're like, what? It's crazy. It's like, he owes me $17,000. We're like, that sounds like not a lot of money, man. I feel like he owes you more than that.
Are you going through chronologically, by the way, or are you picking the ones you're doing?
Bouncing around to a bunch of different kind of things. So we did the first episode is UFC 1. Then we did like two Butterbean fights and a fight from UFC 3, which had a sumo guy against just a karate guy.
We called it 600-pound UFC life.
Then we did the Ultimate Fighter episode 1, where Chris Lieben peed on the other guy's bed, and that was the first. That was like 18 years ago. And then we did, there was a weird thing they did during COVID times, the Alaskan Fighting Championships up in Alaska.
It was like in a backyard somewhere. We're like, this is the weirdest thing we've ever seen. Why is this happening? The announcers were terrible. They blew out their mics every time they were talking. And we're like, this is hilarious. But it was a product of COVID where you're like, remember in COVID times, like when ESPN, there was no sports and ESPN did the horse competition between WNBA players and NBA players. That was insane. It was
insane because you'd see like Mike Conley. We're like, what gym is Mike Conley in? What high school gym? Oh no, that's a gym in his house. And then you see a WNBA player like
playing at the apartment complex she lives in, and you're like, wow, there is a real money disparity. People. But so we did that, and then we did, I'm sure you remember Fried Takayama, that crazy punch thing that probably comes up on everyone's social media where there's no defense and that they just land like 1,000 punches in a matter of like a minute and a half. We did that fight. And then there was another really crazy fight that we did that was in Hawaii, where the fighter's sister came in and started punching the other guy after the fight. It was great.
Like, insane and fun. And we're like, this, I think we can do this. You know what I mean? Like, there's enough weird things in the UFC library. And for our fans, they're like, oh my God, it's just so great to see you guys making fun of this stuff.
Did you wrap a season already and you're doing another one? Or are you in the middle of one right now?
So we wrapped 6 episodes. The first ones you can see for free, which you saw through our Instagram, in our bio and our Instagram. You can check it. It's UFC Fight, UFC's YouTube page. But the other 5 are on Fight Pass. So if you're a Fight Pass subscriber, which I'm sure people, fans of your network, if you listen to the Bisping podcast, I'm sure there are a lot of Fight Pass subscribers. You can just watch all the episodes there. So, you know, for the YouTube one, it's been seen like almost 1,000,000 times, that one, which is, you know, we know that's like to have a comedy start from nothing in there. It's, we're really, really happy with that. But we have a lot of say in that. Now, we don't have a lot of say as to who's the, you know, we don't have a lot of say as to who's going to watch it on Fight Pass.
But
apparently it did well on Fight Pass. So we're and there were like old grizzled UFC guys in the building. This is what we heard, you know, from like, you know, Forrest is like the best, but there were like old grizzled UFC guys who I'm sure were like, what are we doing here? What are we even doing here? And those guys like the show because they love that you're just ripping on things. They just,
did you get greenlit for a second season already, or you don't know yet?
So we're waiting to find out. They're going to still figure out what their budget is for 2023. I think we're going to get to do one. I hope so. I'm going to put it out into the universe that we'll get to do one, maybe even two more. But again, the general feeling there is they were really happy with it. So I think their sort of budgets come out, we'll probably get another season.
So your other podcast is called Dumb People Town, where you highlight idiotic, stupid stories that you find, I guess, online. I would like to hear when I say to you, what is like the most shockingly stupid thing that you covered? Is there one that comes to mind?
There are a handful that come to mind. There's the guy who got pulled over by the cops, and in his glove compartment, he had a dildo. In his backseat, he had a rattlesnake. And in his trunk, he had enriched uranium. We're like, this guy's got a lot of shit in his car. So then we played the game on the podcast. What doesn't he have? A relationship with his biological father? Probably not. Nope. Custody of his kids?
Custody of his kids? Probably not.
Yeah, not. A GED? Definitely not. So, definitely. I mean, there's that. There was like the guy who tried to rob a house with his cat. That was hilarious.
He was holding his cat?
Okay. No, he brought his cat with him on this robbery. And it's like, dude, of all the animals,
they're not going to come when you call. Like, if you ever had a cat, like the best cat in the world is like, someone's like, he knows his name. He comes to you occasionally when you call him. I'm like, so you're saying the best cat in the world is a mediocre dog. All right, fine. Whatever.
Are we sure it wasn't an ocelot? Maybe it could rough some people up.
Maybe if you pick a bigger cat, like a big cat out on the road.
Yeah. You know, like Salvador Dali had, they had a little viciousness to him. They threw
A puma.
There was a woman. There was a woman who got her head stuck in the tailpipe of a truck at a country music festival.
It's just a big tailpipe. But she, I don't know why she was like, let me see if I can get in there. And
and people say people at country music festivals are not small minded. I'm like, there's the proof, bro. There it is.
Is it a shockingly high amount of Florida stories or not really?
Lots of Florida stories. So what Florida does, then Oregon kind of does this too, is they release their police blotters. So like, you know, we know kind of what's going on. And there's a lot of like the guy who, you know, what we sort of started to do now, which is kind of fun, is like on Reddit, there's a lot of who's the asshole. Those are fun stories. Like, the woman who wasn't invited to, she's pregnant and wasn't invited to her own baby shower because the husband just wanted to have it with just his boys. Like, who's the asshole? Can you read the details?
Or we named our dog after my sister's child, or they named their baby after our dog, and then they get into a fight over. I mean, there's like the woman who burned down her house because she was trying to kill a spider. I mean, there's so many.
The woman who tried to marry a chandelier. I'm like, that's
pretty cool.
He's not. Look, that
you know where he's gonna be all the time. You know,
that's
he's
right.
He's not gonna cheat on you with, and like
it's
a
also
sconce.
Easy to turn her on. You get it. Everyone's with me. Come on, hello.
Yeah, you know, I saw him kind of messing with a candle the other night, but whatever. He's looking outside, a little sideways glance. But those stories are really funny because you start to like it literally breaks into a discussion of like, who are these people and where are we right now? Because I don't know if you guys feel this way, but I feel like the world's getting dumber. Oh, yeah. And the only way to fight back is through comedy. So we usually have like a great guest on. I mean, I think recent episodes we got, you know, Fortune Feimster and Tom Papa. And I mean, all of your favorite like comedy, Neil Brennan.
Have you been able to track down any of the people and like get to the truth with that person, or you haven't tried that?
One person we got in touch with and we regretted it deeply, because then it's like, this guy's like sliding into your DMs every second. You're like, this is not, it's like when someone speaks up in a comedy show and we're like, okay, we'll handle this, but like, we're not a comedy troupe. It's just me and Jay. Like we've got it. Like we don't need. So if you engage, you sort of poke the devil a little bit and, you know, see it sort of poke the beehive a little bit. And there's no need to do that sometimes. But yes, it would be nice to like have an enormous
poking the beehive. There was a woman who recently released bees at cops who were coming to her house to arrest her.
So and she was like trying to defend herself by releasing the bees.
Yeah, she shook a box that had them to make them mad and then release them.
Yeah, wow. Release the bees. It's like Mr. Burns, release the hounds.
That's pretty awesome. I want to ask a couple of rapid fire questions, then we got to do the first because that was a pretty quick 45 minutes already. Jesus.
Sure, I love it.
So number one, one of you was a page on Letterman, is that right?
Me.
Or am I wrong?
Yeah.
How long were you there?
So when I first came to New York in 95, I got a job as a CBS page, and I was a page. So I worked on that and Politically Incorrect and the CBS News. I would like work with the news and stuff. It was a fun job. And there were some really cool people. Paul Soder, who's from like the Broken Lizard, you know, like Super Troopers and that whole group.
We had
group.
A couple of those guys on the show. They were just awesome.
Amazing. And Paul's a great guy. He was a page at that time. Our buddy Eric Friedman, who's a great comedy writer, he was a page at that time. So it was a nice mix of like really smart kind of young. It was a great beginning program to like mm-hmm. be a part with these people. And, you know, I loved it. And of course I'm sitting in there like the first day I'm seating audience at Letterman, I'm up top and they're like, you know, they're sound checking for the Cranberries zombie. And you're watching this and you're like, okay, this is amazing. That's and someday cool. We'll hopefully get it. We never got a chance to be on Letterman, but like still it's just, it was very inspiring. We watched these people go on the show and I was like, okay, all right, this is where we got to go.
I have a picture. I got to sit in Letterman's chair just because I was lifelong friends with Eddie Brill, who used
nice.
To do the warm-up.
Love Eddie Brill. Love Eddie.
And he invited me down. I got to have a picture of me sitting in Letterman's chair, which is pretty pretty special picture to have. Is
amazing.
It still true that the only comedian you guys have ever written for is Kathy Griffin, or is that expanded at all?
It's expanded. It just expanded. First of all, we wrote for her and she did this thing for the troops down in San Diego, and it was
for VH1.
For VH1, and it was 20,000 people were writing jokes for her and like sketches for her to do with Katy Perry. And like,
meanwhile, backstage, like Nicki Minaj was making Katy Perry cry, and like Ann Wilson from Heart was there, and we're like, what the is going on? This is
right. It was insane. But we did have a great joke with her about who is it? Bristol Palin. She called her like the white precious. That was really funny. That was really good. And like the crowd was like,
oh
20,000 people like, oh, and she didn't care. It was really fun to write for her. But we just wrote on a show, Kevin Hart and Kenan Thompson did this like end of the year show for Peacock, their sort of year in review and whatnot. And we wrote a bunch of jokes for them, which is fun. I mean, we normally write it for us, but our friend who produced our show, The Nosebleeds, was doing this show too. He's like, you want to come on and just write some stuff? And we're like, sure. So we wrote a bunch of stuff for them to do and jokes and stuff that they did. And it was a blast. It was fun to write in their voice. It was like a different skill altogether, trying to write for someone else and be like, all right, this is something they would do. This is something Kevin would do. This is something Keenan would do.
And then lastly, and then we'll do the first two last ones. Is it Scott Rogowski from Trivia HQ? Trivia was your producer for a while or still
Scott Rogowski. I love that you made it a soft G. I love that you're always.
I might have to call him soft G from now on.
That's a good name.
I like that story where Denzel added a vowel added a syllable to your last name.
Denzel, Jay. I saw Denzel. Yes, I saw Denzel Washington and James Purson. He was like, you and your brother, you do a show. What's your name? I'm like, we're the Sklar Brothers. I could not have said it more clearly. We're the Sklar Brothers. And he looks at me and he was like, the Sklar Brothers.
The Sklar Brothers.
I'm like, are you adding a syllable? Have I been saying it wrong? Denzel, tell me, please.
James. He says that you got to do it. If he says it, you got to add it. I mean, he's a national treasure.
If he told me I had to commit to a certain college so he could get out of jail, I would have done that.
Yeah. Told me I had to convert to Islam, I would do it. Done. Anyway, we got
just thinking about it. I'm already halfway there.
Same.
And there's some upcoming movie that you guys play Rabbi Randy and Rabbi Jason. Am I right with that or show?
So that we shot a while back ago. That was like a camp movie. It was so much fun. It was who did it? I forgot who did that. It was
like this little indie film that we came out and we just, they're like, just go ahead and talk for a while as these rabbis. And we could not stop trying to make the kids laugh and us laugh. And it ended up being this thing that was supposed to take a short period of time to shoot, but we kept like Ricky Gervais, like breaking every take because it was really funny and they cut it together and it was funny. I don't know where it went.
A lot of our stuff, it was called Camp, and a lot of our stuff made it into that. It was a blast. We've done that a bunch before. We're in a movie called Teacher of the Year, which is really funny. Is that on Netflix? That might be, but it was Keegan-Michael Key and just really, really fun. And we played these guidance counselors. This is funny. We play these guidance counselors who are like the worst guidance counselors ever. Like just, and we talked to
college prep
and talking to regular kids and just giving them the worst advice ever. And I roll up to my daughter's school. She's a senior. She's like, just went through that whole thing. And her guidance counselor came out, this woman, and she was like, oh my God, I saw you guys in Teacher of the Year. And I was like, did you like it? And she was like, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah,
I wasn't doing an impression.
We're being the bad version of you. We're being bad.
We're shitty. Come on, man.
Let me ask you this before we go to the first. In my life, I'm 53, as I said. There was one time in our adult lives, not in your kids, and you get the stupid fights with your brother, it doesn't mean anything, where my brother and I legit did not talk to each other for like a month.
Wow.
We got mad at each other and we didn't talk for a month. Has anything like that ever happened to you guys where it was a fight? And it may not have been a month, but a fight where you guys took a break from each other.
No.
I mean, we fight.
We definitely fight. You have to fight. I feel like you have to fight. Like those people who don't fight, you're like, okay, so you're choosing not to lean into anything of what you're feeling or thinking.
You're holding that in and turning it into cancer. Okay.
Right. Good. Okay. Solid. So you got to get it out and certain things that frustrate. It's like, we're pretty good at understanding where it's coming from. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Also, I don't know if you're this way with your brother. If you ever played sports with him, I mean, he was 5'7", so I'm assuming.
Also, I know nothing about sports and don't give a shit about sports.
You've never met anyone who hates sports less than
him. I do know a little bit of UFC
less
just because Buffer was on the network for a while, and now Bisping's on the network. So ancillarily, I just learned a little bit about UFC, but I don't give a shit.
You could tell him soccer has a three-point shot, and he'll go along with it.
Yeah. Sounds right to me. Sounds right.
Thanks. So, James, you played sports, obviously.
You better believe it. Yeah.
So the... You know how you get down on yourself? You're like, all right, I bet like no one can get down on you like you. This is the, like athletes understand this. Like, and then maybe it's this way in comedy too and whatnot, but like nobody can get down on you the way you can get down on yourself. Jay and I get down on each other in sports things, and like nobody can handle it because we're
like, I remember I was in center field one time, and Randy was pitching, and I was like, come on, you're screwing this up. I'm riding him. I'm like so loud.
High school baseball.
That the guy on second base from the other team turned around and was like, hey, man, go easy on him. What are you doing? I'm like you're
cut
on
him some slack. You're on the other team.
Trying. He said, cut him some slack. He's trying. The guy's from the other team.
Right. So, you know, and they, I mean, it's so we kind of have that and that gets out, but we've, I guess our rule, you know, how marriages are like, don't go to bed mad because mm-hmm. it's just, you don't want to let something fester and whatnot. Our thing is like, fight, get it out, and then just kind of, you got to move forward. You got to move forward. I
mean, it was only happened once in our whole lives. And we lived together till we were almost 40.
So what was it? Wow. What was it over? Yeah. Do you remember or no?
It was over money, of course. It was something right. stupid with money. And then it just, he apologized to me. So I take that as a win.
Huge win. Yeah. So that's, it's so funny. Like when our kids like are crazy or get into a fight, there's a moment where you're like, this is the worst thing ever. Like, I hate being in this fight. Also, like, I hate what this kid is doing and I'm right and they're wrong. There's like yeah. that attitude of it. But then in the very dark recesses of my mind, I'm like, there's going to be a reconciliation. There's going to be the moment at the end where everybody's cool. And then like, we get mm-hmm. to a better place where your brother apologizes and you consider that a win. Getting to knowing that that thing is coming, and I don't even know when it's going to come. I just, in my mind, I'm like, it's going to come tomorrow. It's going to come the next year. It's going to come like in an hour or two. That moment is like the most satisfying. I can't get this itch. It's on my back. And then someone just comes in with just like the most glorious back scratcher and does it. And you're like, okay, this is what life's all about. That feeling in that moment right there is great. The fight was almost worth the reconciliation.
It's like makeup sex, basically.
Kind of same sentiment, except you never want to talk makeup sex with your kids.
Well, speak for yourself. All right. So the name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We're going to hit the first right now, Shannon.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
We do this with every single guest since the dawn of time. We asked them their first experience with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It should be interesting to see the parallels here. Mm-hmm. We start with rock and roll. We just mean the first concert you went to on your own volition.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be rock, just a concert you went to.
Oh, ours was together. Ours was fucking rock. We were together. So maybe you can talk about like the first cut. So first one we ever went to, again, we grew up in St. Louis, Midwest, classic rock. That's kind of what we grew up on. Mm-hmm. Had a classic rock radio station called KSHE 95. So funny.
My old radio show was on that station. That's so funny.
KSHE 95. Yeah. It's like,
it was such a cock and balls classic rock station, but the call letters were KSHE.
Like,
if you didn't know, you would almost seem like that was like the Lilith Fair's channel.
Like, that's, I would funny. Call KSHE95 and be like, so they're playing, tons of Sarah McLachlan. All right, fine. They're playing The Story, Building a Mystery. Anyway, so we went to go see Loverboy and Joan Jett. And Joan Jett opened up for Loverboy. It was 1982 at the arena, then the Checker Dome in St. Louis, Missouri, where the Blues played. And
you could argue that Joan Jett had the bigger single with I Love Rock and Roll, which was the cover.
But Loverboy had the bigger catalog, and they just put out the album with like Hot Girls in Love.
You want a piece of my heart? You got to start from the start.
I mean, working for the weekend and Strike Zone. I mean, we can go
loving every minute of it on there.
Loving every minute of it. Yeah. I mean, these are like
loving every minute. I think was later. I think that was later.
Turn me loose. Utterly ridiculous. Yeah,
right.
I was here to please. Right, I'm even on my knees. Making love to whoever I please.
By the way, that's a problematic lyric right now, right? Come on,
making love totally. But like, even the cadence of that, I was like, that could have been an Alanis Morissette song,
right?
I felt like you ought to know. I could be wrong.
So we saw that concert and we freaking loved it. I mean, it was phenomenal. Like, so cool to go to a concert and like everyone's smoking weed at the concert and like you can smell it. It's all over you. We bought the concert t-shirts, like not in the concert, but like from the parking lot on the way in. So they were like knockoff bootleg. Yeah. And like you're wearing it. And like that experience was like, holy shit, we're out at night. I mean, I think we were like, what? We were 10 years old.
11, you're two years younger than me. 10, so 11. If it was 82, I was 12. You guys were 10.
Maybe it was 83 that we went. Whatever. Yeah. It was like incredible. So that was the first one. And Genesis was the second one. So like, that's all Illegal Alien, Home by the Sea, Second Home by the Sea. Like, these are like those songs. That's all was like huge at that moment. Mama, come on. Mama, Genesis, give me a mom. Dude, lights go down. He's got a light underneath his face.
So great. By the way, one of the best strip. I used to be a strip club DJ. One of the best songs for a girl to strip club DJ to dance to is Mama.
Mama.
Get out of here. So please, don't,
please don't hurt me, Mama. Do you know our old bit about strip club DJs? We used to do.
I think I do. Yes,
in our first club DJs, used to say they don't get enough credit because they are the only voice you hear in the club. So not only do they have to sort of facilitate the sexuality, but they also have to handle mundane announcements.
That was it. So that's the bit. You set that up. It's like they're like they're the bridge between business and boners.
I did it for a very long fucking time. What were you going to say, James?
I think Mama's the weirdest one I've ever heard.
It's an amazing song.
The weirdest the one I've ever and seen. The way it builds, it's just fucking great.
That's so good.
Weirdest one ever. Talk of the Town, summer of 96, Las Vegas, totally nude, last dance of the night. A girl named Sky, who was very hot but missing teeth right here for some reason, closed the night with Like Suicide by Soundgarden. Strangest moment.
Nirvana Rape Me would be a good one. The first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed was not the first drug you ever did.
After weed. Yeah,
unless weed wasn't the first drug. You know,
weed was weed was the first.
Mushrooms in college.
Yeah, mushrooms and mushroom tea. I remember having mushroom tea in college.
Together?
I remember
I did it with a friend and made the mistake of doing it at like 12 at night, and then we just walked around because we couldn't handle the party. There were so many. It was like starting to get too much in the party, and then at like 2 a.m. when it really started going and. We walked down to Michigan Stadium. I don't know how we got into the stadium, but somehow we got in. We were laying down on the 50-yard line, and then I was like, I can't handle how big this place is. It's too big.
Got into the big house while you're tripping on mushrooms.
Yeah, my God, the greatest.
On mushrooms.
The greatest thing I've ever heard in my life.
I did a bunch of whippets, and I remember doing those, and like that was like crazy 3-second, oh my God, where did I just go type highs, and I'm like, and I remember just being so drunk and then doing a bunch of whippets, and that was crazy fun. But again, college, and you're we're going to experiment.
I just did my first whippets ever on this show. I tried drug every year with TJ Miller. He came in and we did whippets. It was my first time in my life.
That's crazy. I mean, but 3 seconds of like, where did
that's
I go?
What I like about it. It's over in 3 seconds. Okay, then lastly, would be interesting now to see who went first. I assume it didn't happen on the same day. The first time you had sex.
First time I had was in Israel, my summer of between junior and senior year of high school. And
did you do birthright or you just happen to go there?
I mean, that's what I said. Would you like to make Aliyah? I said to the girl, I said, which is in Hebrew. Would you like to go up? This is your birthright. And then we proceeded to.
Make sure nothing births right out of this, right?
Yeah, exactly. I don't need a birthright out of this thing. But that was the very first time. And it was, you know, I was like heading towards that. But I had a great girlfriend in Israel and she had done it before. And, you know, it was actually felt like holy on some level, and I'm glad it happened there, and I'm glad we did it there, and then that was it.
And Jason?
Mine was with a girlfriend too from an Israel program. This was when I was 20. So a few years later. I mean, there were chances and opportunities, but it wasn't right before that. But this was like I wanted to be with somebody that I liked who was, you know, who I was with, and that was back this was in Israel again. Also, it was beautiful. Wow. Beautiful
way to lean land. Into the Jewiness of all of us.
We did. I mean,
someone's got to fight Kanye back, and that's what we're trying to do.
I said, why on this night do we dip twice is really what I said.
Hey, why does it taste so bitter? That's right.
because it represents the tears. Oh, why are you crying?
Why are we representing 2,000 years of bondage?
So you guys are currently on tour. You go to superscalar.com. You can follow them at Sklar Brothers on the Instagrams.
Yeah.
As we said, the first season of the new show, The Nosebleeds, is on UFC Fight Pass and the two podcasts that we talked about. Anything else you guys want to plug before we go around the room with our plugs?
No, we're just to come see us. Like, we just added a couple of dates. They're up on superscholars.com in our tour section, but we're excited. We're going to go to Lawrenceburg, Indiana. Never been there. It's right outside of Cincinnati. That's March 4th. And then, you know, Phoenix at the end of the month. Then we hang out with Big J Okerson and all of our New York peeps at Moon Tower in April.
Well, I'm going to be there.
Oh, nice. We'll see you there, my man.
See you there.
He specifically said he didn't want to come on this episode when he heard it was you two.
I love Big J so much. What a great dude. He's like one of our favorite people ever. And and then we'll be in Minneapolis at Acme Comedy Company. It's been a while since we've been there. I'm super excited to get back there. But we've had great shows. Already started out a really great year. We were in Denver in January and then San Diego at the American Comedy Company. And then in San Francisco, we did a live Dumb People Town, which is just a blast.
That's great.
So just love, and we love this hour. This is the last thing I'll say. The hour that we're doing right now, we're just not sure what it's.
For a second, I thought you were talking about this hour that we were doing.
This hour that we did together was beautiful. But the hour of stand-up that we're doing right now is like our favorite hour that we've ever done. And we're actually not sure what we want to do with it, whether it be, and I'll speak it out into the world. Who knows? Maybe we write some connective tissue to it about who we are and whatnot and put it out there and do like a two-man off-Broadway show of it, kind of in the Birbiglia, Neil Brennan sort of vibe. Loved those shows that we saw that those guys did and feel like there's something in there for us. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's Ghost Comedy Central. We don't know. Like, we're not sure where it's going to go. So very happy to do it, though. We're excited to do it out on the road. So come catch us.
All right, James, your plugs?
The James Mattern on Instagram and YouTube. Watch my special The Check Spot, where I do stand up and interact with the audience while they pay their bills because I'm an idiot. I will be in Moontown. I think I'm the first performer of the festival. I'm opening up for Chris DiStefano April 12th at the Paramount. And then I'm coming back the second week and I'm going to host a bunch of shows. So it'll be a lot of fun, man.
We'll see you there, man. I'm psyched.
Touchdown.
We'll see you there.
Shannon, we allow you to speak now at the end of the show. Your plug, Shannon.
Thank you. You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on and they tell their own personal experiences about their worst date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience with the paranormal.
All right. Now, guys, don't indicate. I think this one's easy, but don't indicate till all three of us lock in our answers. Do the Sklar brothers believe in ghosts? You could split the diff. You could go both in one direction or the other. Shannon, we'll start with you.
Okay. So I've been thinking about this a lot. And what I think is that overall it's no, but if one of them was going to lean towards more of the possibility, I think it's Jason.
Okay. James, your thoughts?
as the odds maker of this, I think you're making a good, I think you're correct there, Shannon. So I think overall, no, -450. Randy, -900. If this was the Super Bowl, you're the Niners against the Chargers. This is three touchdowns.
I don't even know what that means, but I'll say this. I go hard pass, definitely nose on both of them. Yep. I'd be shocked. And let's see the answer is, guys.
We don't believe in ghosts. I don't believe in ghosts, but I go to Burning Man a bunch. And if you believe in like what happens at Burning Man, you can believe that anything is possible. Maybe a past life comes through there and maybe someone can, like, put it this way. My friends on our 50th birthday as a gift to me, got me a psychic, like a phone call with a psychic, which I would never do for myself. Most indulgent thing ever. And I know we're at the end of the episode, so why bring up another story? But the point is that I said to this woman at the very beginning, I was like, listen, I do not believe that anything you're gonna say is like, I don't believe in this at all. However, and this is, you know, this Shannon, this goes to what speaks to what you're saying before. I said, however, if you do say something, I'm open-minded enough that like I'll give you props. Like, I'm not gonna shut it down just to prove my theory. I'm open-minded enough. So I mean, if a ghost wafts through here and makes a strong case, I'll be like, yeah, but right now you're right, Ralph. No, I don't believe in it.
Fair enough. I think I'd be curious to see if we did the math on Jews that believe in ghosts. I bet you it's pretty low. That's my opinion. I could be wrong, but I think it's pretty low.
Yeah, we were talked on our last album, our special that we did on Stars about, it was called Hipster Ghosts. Like, we're like, I can't think of anything worse than being like your house haunted by a bunch of hipster ghosts. Like, you hear a sound, you come downstairs and there's just a ghost going through your record collection like,
All right, follow me everywhere at you're going to say something, James? I'm sorry.
I just think that there was an outside chance that while Jason was tripping balls, he saw like Bo Schembechler's ghost, and it just was like, you know what? I'm gonna leave it open
still
right
alive
now
because it was 94. But I saw the future.
He was still kind of a ghost then. Let's be honest. After he fired Bill Frieder, no coming back.
Frieder cheated.
Follow me over at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness called The Good Sugar Podcast comes out on Mondays. Tomorrow, as I'm taping this, I'm going to look at the final, you know, bells and whistles with the store. We're opening on 3rd Avenue and 69th Street, the first Good Sugar location. It should be open, I would say, within the next week or two. Guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. We add a song of the week every week. Do we want to do a Lover Boy? What was Turn Me Loose?
Yeah, Turn Me Loose. Come on, do it. Turn Me Loose.
Love to whoever I please right after this episode.
Do it.
All right, we'll see everybody next time on the SDR Show.
Listening to the SDR Show.